This podcast is brought to you by The Shift.
It's story time!
Hello and welcome back to the Storytime podcast. My name is Claire, I go by Clizaire on the internet, and this is the podcast where people come on to tell me their stories. And this week I have with me Letitia Francis. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you? Please introduce yourself.
Good. So I am a business mindset coach that is dedicated to helping women get their mind right so that they can see the success and fulfillment that they desire in their lives. I work with women mainly on mindset, but I also help them build a solid foundation to a new service-based business.
Wow. Okay. And tell everyone where to find you, where to follow you online.
I can be found at Black Rose Coaching on Instagram. Black is spelled B-L-A-Q-U-E, but I spend a lot of time on Instagram, so that's the best way to connect with me, and all of my details are there. So that's a good home base for me.
I will have all your links down in the description and in the show notes on the audio platforms as well. So you have a story for me today.
So I grew up in the beautiful island of Bermuda. And at the age of 7, my mom was getting ready to remarry. And I remember having a conversation with one of my family members asking, why did my parents get divorced? And the story I was told was that my birth was the reason for my parents' breakup.
Oh my God.
It's like a shit ton to handle at 7 years old. And it really, I would say it changed the dynamics of everything around me. I resented my mama because the way that this story was told is my mom focused too much attention on me and she forgot about my dad. And I was a daddy's girl. So I wanted my family together. My mom remarried. My father was already remarried at that time. And both of my parents' spouses made it known that they really didn't like me. So I was literally in between two family units. My mom had two children back to back after marriage. My dad's wife had a child that he was raising, and there was kind of no place for me. So as a result of that, I think I spent a lot of time looking for attention, a lot of time, you know, just seeking love. I call myself a self-contained hurricane. I have a huge personality that I kind of stuff into a can to keep people around me comfortable. But one of the things that I used to hear almost all my life is that I'm too much. I have too much mouth. I have too much attitude. I'm too smart for my own good. And that made me kind of feel worthless because, like, if I could choose a personality, I probably would choose one that doesn't rub people the wrong way. But this is what I was born with.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that one.
This is what I'm born with, and I have to find a way to make it work. By the time I was 14, I was really acting out. Like, and I was getting in trouble in school. I was labeled a problem child. Like, my friends' parents didn't even want me around because I was just, like, so rebellious. And around that time, I met this man that was twice my age. He was 28 years old. And I'm a big Disney fan. I see your eyes.
Yeah. She's like, hang on. Weren't you 14?
I was 14. That's right. I was a big Disney fan back then. And you know, Disney back in the 80s, it was all about the prince in shining armor, you know, Prince Charming and
In retrospect, a lot of those princes were a lot older than the princesses, and the princesses were teenagers, like, in retrospect.
Exactly. It's really odd about Disney. Like, they're bringing out a Moana 2, and Moana is supposedly marrying Maui. And I'm like, wait a minute, Maui's, like, thousands of years older than her. and we act like this is okay. But this is the, this is what girls look up to. Some man is gonna come in and save me from my shit. And that's what he was for me. He came in, he showed me all the attention that I ever wanted. He loved me. But I was too young to realize that he was manipulating me. He was grooming me, and he was taking advantage of me. I spent a lot of time with this man because, like I said, my mom had two very young children. She was focused on raising her babies. They were 13 months apart. So essentially twins by the time they're walking around, right?
Yeah, they call those Irish twins.
Yes.
So, you have two kids, one after the other, they're called Irish twins.
Yeah, so I got a lot, I got away with a lot. And I spent most of my time when I was not in school with this man. And I remember when my mom found out about him, she did a background check. And she told me, this guy is dangerous. You need to leave him alone. She had found out that every relationship that he had been in prior to me ended in restraining orders.
Jesus, and she was really concerned. Did a background check.
Yeah. Whoa. She did a background check. But at that stage, I had never, ever seen any aggression. He was so kind to me. And you know, when you're 14 and you're in your teenagers, you think you know everything. So fuck what my mama was saying.
Well, especially if you have issues with your mom, like you definitely don't listen to them. And
yeah, I just thought she was gonna
do the opposite of what she tells you to do. Yeah.
So yeah, I was about 16. Just before I went 16, he choked me for the first time. And I knew that that wasn't right. So I left. I packed up all my stuff that was at his house. I put him into a black bin bag and I left. And I couldn't tell anybody what happened because I had spent almost 2 years to this point trying to defend my relationship. And you don't want to be wrong, you know? So I went back into being at home most of the time, and the relationship with my mom and her husband was very contentious. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of arguments, because like I said, I'm a hurricane in a can. I'm not easily controlled. And I remember there was a day that I got into an argument with my mom's husband. And I remember saying to him, I should just kill myself. And that motherfucker mocked me. He said, oh, you're gonna kill yourself? Go right along. Let me call your mama. Let me call your sisters. He called everybody into the kitchen and they all watched me take a handful of pills and walk out of the house. So my mom came after me and I remember her getting me in the car, taking me to the hospital. And the whole way to the hospital, she was just telling me how angry she was at me. And I was sitting there like, how could you be angry when you did absolutely nothing to stop me? You let your husband mock me and you did nothing to stop it. I was put into outpatient psychiatric care after that. I was going to a psychiatrist twice a week. I was put on Prozac for depression, and I kind of wore that as a badge of honor, I guess, to get more attention, you know what I mean? I just wanted people to see me. At some period after that, I went to live with my father for a short period of time because the fighting with my mom was just huge. And I remember being there for less than a month and my dad coming and saying to me, well, my wife doesn't really want to raise another child, so you're going to have to go back to your mom. I get back to my mom around this time. I'm about 17. And I got back in the house with my mama, and now I'm just like really pissed off because I don't want to be here. I want to be with my daddy, but my daddy doesn't want me there. Like, I really felt like no one loved me. And I remember getting into a fight with my mom one day, and it was a physical fight. I had never hit my mom before, but I was angry. I hit her, I pushed her, and I thought that was the end of it, if I'm honest. A couple of days later, I received a notification of a registered letter that I had to go and collect. And I thought it was odd, but I thought it was coming from my father. So I remember having a conversation in the living room with my mom, like, who would send me a registered letter? Like, I'm not even 18. Why would I be getting a registered letter? And she acted like she had no idea what I was talking about. I go pick up the letter and I read it. And it was a letter from my mom's lawyer telling me that I was no longer allowed on her property. And if I returned to her property, I would be removed by the police. So essentially, I got a restraining order.
And like, was the intent that as soon as you opened that letter, you weren't able to go back to the house?
Pretty much. I had to find somewhere to go that day.
Oh my God.
Because I had put my hands on my mama, my mama's family were like, nope, back up. I didn't really have a great relationship with my father after being sent back home. So my dad's family were like, nope, back up. So where was I going to go at 17 years old? I went to the only place that I knew that I wouldn't have problems. I went back to the guy that choked me. And yeah, he again stepped in as the knight in shining armor to save this damsel in distress. But that came at a cost. The psychological abuse that occurred was instant. Your parents don't love you. I'm the only person in this world that's going to take care of you, and you owe me. And as a person who was already feeling kind of worthless, you believe that. Like, that became my narrative. Like, I have to do whatever I need to do to keep this man happy because he's keeping a roof over my head. And if I don't, then I'll be homeless. I married him when I was 19.
Wow.
And the abuse after we got married was like 10 times worse. He would slap me if I disagreed with him. He would punch me if I looked at him the wrong way. There were times where he literally barricaded us in the house and tortured me at night. I was raped. I was sodomized. I was threatened by fire. I went through a lot. But at that time, I had just gotten a job as a customs officer. So I'm working in law enforcement now. And I was terrified of anyone finding out. Because once you're in law enforcement, you kind of see how things work. Like, they paint law enforcement as this, you know, service for you. But the reality is, I was living in a very small community. Bermuda is tiny compared to cities. Like, I live in Worcester, and there are more people in Worcester than there are in Bermuda. And Bermuda is 21 square miles. So I'm used to a very tiny environment. Like, your neighbor knows more about you than you know about you. And people mind your business. So for me, I was in this situation, not wanting to tell anyone what was going on because I didn't want to be judged. I didn't want people to like think that I was a liar because I spent so much time, you know, trying to paint this pretty picture about my relationship. And once I realized how much the police gossiped, I definitely did not want to use that service in any way. There was a period in time, right before a national holiday, we had gotten into a very big fight. And I had acrylic nails at the time. The fight was so bad that my nails, including the acrylic, were ripped off of my fingers. Oof. I was barricaded in the house, and some way or the other, I managed to get out. I had on a tie-dye t-shirt and my underpants, and that's all I had. And I ran to my father's sister, who lived probably like 10 minutes away from me, and she called the police. I was not happy about it, but at least I had an escort to go back to the house and get my stuff. Then we got back to the house with the police. He had rebarricaded the house and had actually made a noose out of an electrical cord and was pretending that he was going to commit suicide. So the focus went from me getting my stuff
to helping him,
to helping this narcissistic asshole, right? I remember going back to my aunt's house and being told that I couldn't stay there and I had to find somewhere else to go. And I went to a friend's house and I slept on her couch for, it might have been a night or two, but without giving people the reason why I was there, it wasn't like I could stay there for a long period of time. Like, I still wasn't willing to admit to people what was actually going on. So I go back. It's the only thing that I know to do. I remember shortly after that, I had decided that I wanted to go to uni. And I talked to him about it. And he told me, hell no, you married me, so this is your life. Don't think that any of this is going to change while we're married. You're a wife and you can't just go off and do whatever you want to do. And believe it or not, that was when things started to turn for me. I have been labeled as extremely intelligent from very young. And I am a person that honestly loves to learn. If I could be a professional student, that's what I would be. I love learning. So for me, the fact that he was stopping my growth, not the fact that he was beating my ass, but the fact that he was stopping me from learning, I became resentful. And I knew that eventually I would have to leave because I wanted more for myself. I remember a couple of months later, the friend that I went to sleep on her couch, she called me. I had just come home from work and I could not find my mobile phone. And it wasn't like a smartphone. It was like, you know, there's Nokia flips or Motorola flips that have snake on them, like, you know. And I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Like, I used to ride a moped. So I just figured my cell phone fell out of my pocket. Anyway. My friend called me that night on my landline and was crying to me about this relationship that she was in. She was in a relationship with a heroin addict that was abusing her and she didn't know how to get out. And one thing, I guess all of my friends used to come to me for advice because, like, I've been in this relationship now for 8 years. I've painted this amazingly pretty picture. So they thought that everything that was going on in my life was A-okay. And I remember trying to give her advice. And I picked up a book that I was reading by Yanla Vincent. It was called Until Today. And I randomly opened a page. And in that passage that I read to my friend, it was talking about people are in your life for a reason, a season, and a lifetime. And the reason why your interpersonal relationships do not work is because you're trying to keep someone in your life that was only meant to be there temporarily. And I remember reading that to her and thinking, like, I felt like a sinner in church reading that, like, because that passage was really meant for me. That night changed my life, actually, because my husband came home with my mobile phone. And in that mobile phone was text messages from another guy. And I knew as soon as he showed me the phone that I was in extreme danger. And I got up and I ran to the landline and I called my mother and I said, you need to come get me now. Because if you don't, I think I'm going to die. And in that moment, he ripped the cord of the landline out of the wall. In that moment, I also saw that he had a knife in his hand. And I knew that anyone that's been through abuse, you get used to it, right? But you kind of know when things are just going to be like over in a second, or there's going to be longer events. And the way that he was looking at me, I had never ever seen that look before. I was terrified. He said to me, you are not leaving her today unless you leave in a body bag. And I fought for my life. At the time, we were living with someone else because our house had gotten destroyed by a hurricane. How funny is that? But we were living with someone else. And I think I got slightly complacent being there because he was calmer in that environment.
Because he had to be. Yeah.
Right. So that evening, his friend was not home. And I knew I was in trouble. He barricaded us in the bedroom. And the bedroom had two doors, one that went to like the kitchen area and then one that went to the bathroom. And he barricaded the one that went to the kitchen with like a barrel, like a dresser. But the door that went to the bathroom was like Tupperware stackable containers. So very easily moved. And yeah, we fought. When I say it was like an out-of-body experience, like I know a lot of people talk about that and I had just thought it was a joke, but literally it was like watching a movie, seeing me fight this guy. It was almost like I was detached from what was going on. And I remember seeing, the best way to describe it was like, it was like a flash of light on the knife, like the reflection of the knife. And I remember seeing it coming towards me, but I didn't feel any pain. So I actually wasn't aware that he had stabbed me because there's so much adrenaline going on that like, I didn't feel any pain. But in those moments, there was so much commotion. His friend had come home and actually burst into the door that led from the bathroom. I credit his friend for saving my life, if I'm honest. And I remember running out of the room and falling onto the couch. And he came running out, charging after me and straddled me while I was on the couch and was continuing to try to stab me. Luckily, he kept hitting the back of the couch. Like he wasn't hitting me. I think in his rage, he was just trying to stab me and probably wasn't looking. His friend pulled him off of me and then kicked me out of the house.
What?
And I think, if I'm honest, there was a lot of other stuff going on in that house. So I think he kicked me out in the event that somebody called the police to kind of save his ass.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I get right. You.
So it was raining. The house was not surrounded by any grass. So it was like muddy. And I don't remember how long I was outside, but my mom pulled up in the car. Then he realized that someone was coming to get me. He began throwing my clothes out of the window into the mud. And one of the things that he used to do as an apology for the abuse that I endured was buy me Louis Vuittons. So at this time, I'm in my early 20s, 21, 22. I thought I was the shit because I had $20,000 worth of Louis Vuitton bags. In his anger, he started throwing the Louis Vuittons out the window.
Yeah, he probably held it over you as well, did he? Like, I bought these so I can destroy them if I want, kind of thing.
Right. But then he called himself, because that was the first thing I packed up. I'm getting damn purses. Like, I want these damn purses. And I had started packing them in the car. But he called himself, like, oh, how no. You are not taking these purses. So he came outside with the knife, with my blood all over his shirt, and started unpacking my mom's car, looking for the Louis Vuittons. So my mom is like, she could see that I'm bleeding. She could see that he has a knife. She could see all the blood. She's in the car crying and screaming, like, get in the car. Just leave this stuff. Get in the car. But I was going to fight that motherfucker for my purses. I'm going to be honest. I wanted them. I earned them. That was my mentality. I earned this shit. And I think it wasn't until my mom, like, really gave out, like, this real loud scream that I kind of realized I'm actually really in danger here. Like, he could turn around at any minute and slit my throat. It would be that simple. So I got into the car, and I remember my mom saying, well, we got to go to the hospital. Like, you've been stabbed. I still not processing the pain. Once I realized I had been stabbed, the only thing that I had processed was the heat from my blood. I wasn't in pain, but that was the adrenaline running through me. You know what I mean? So I convinced my mama not to take me to the hospital. I will say the one person that knew about all of my abuse was my GP. I did have enough sense to go to my GP every single time and get a record of my injuries. Because I remember probably a year before I met him, we didn't have many murders in Bermuda. Like, they happened probably once a year when I was growing up, and they were usually interpersonal violence, interpersonal relationship violence. And I remember there was a case probably about a year before I met him where a husband killed his wife on her job. And we talked about it in school, and they had told us that if you're ever in a situation where you don't feel comfortable telling somebody what's going on, always go to the doctor, because in the event that something happens to you, they have evidence of long-term abuse. So that is something that I did religiously. So I convinced my mama not to take me to the hospital. I was going to go to the doctor in the morning. We managed to stop the bleeding once we got to her house. And I remember trying to call my job, because I was actually due to be at work, not, you know, a couple of hours later. And I didn't have a uniform. I had nothing. So I had to call my job to let them know that I had been stabbed by my husband and I can't come into work. And after I got all of that sorted out, my mom comes into the kitchen and says to me, well, where are you going to stay? Because you can't stay here. So that moment for me was my lowest point to date. And once again, I was alone, nowhere to go. I felt like, wow, you just helped me stop the bleeding and now you can kick me out.
Like, she came to pick you up. Why on earth then would she then turn around and throw you out?
Because she married a cunt.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So there's no other way to put it. And I still feel that way about him.
No, that's fair enough. But that's, poor you, like, you've had, the two people who are kind of supposed to be there for you are your parents.
I didn't trust them. I couldn't depend on them. So she packed me up and took me to the police station. And I got to the police station and was then transported to a homeless shelter where I stayed for 2 months while I got on my feet, generated enough money so that I could get my own apartment. The homeless shelter helped me to get a restraining order, also helped me to start the process for filing for divorce. And, you know, I kind of thought, okay, this is the end of the story, you know, life goes on. But for me, I never addressed what happened. So I just kind of pick up and moved on thinking that because I walked away from this man, all of a sudden my life will be so much better. You have PTSD after stuff like that. And I started drinking heavily. I wasn't drinking like wine. I was drinking straight scotch. And it got to a point where I was carrying a flask around with me because that was the only way that I could deal with what was going on in my head. I know people around me were probably like, what is going on with her? Because like I was drunk every day, all day, every day, even at work. Like it used to be a joke. Oh, Letitia's walked in, give an Altoid because I always smelled like alcohol. And people like, oh, are you hungover? No, I'm still fucking drunk from last night. Like my hangovers used to kick in 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's how much I used to drink. And it, you know, that began a whole lot of other shit for me. You know, I was dealing with guys, anybody that would give me attention, I, you know, my legs open to. I was in situations that I didn't want to be in. Sometimes not even knowing that I was in. It was a guy that I had been seeing for almost 2 years to find out he had a wife and a girlfriend. And his girlfriend wanted to beat the shit out of me. But wait a minute, he's not really either one of us. You know what I mean? He's got a wife. But I didn't care. I kept on sleeping with him. I didn't care. Like, I don't think that I know that I didn't value my life at that point in time. But it got to a point one Christmas, I had gone to a hotel bar with one of my friends. And we were the only people there because the way I used to work was day on, day off. So we used to spend like weekdays drinking, you know, because nobody else is in the bar. So I got to the hotel bar at 11 o'clock that morning, waiting for my friend. And I ordered Shivers on the Rocks. And I remember the bartender picking up a brand new bottle of Shivers. And in a matter of 2.5 hours, I had drank that whole bottle to myself. And I think that's when I realized, this is bad. Yeah. Like, this is real bad. Like, first of all, Shivers is really a man's drink. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't even like the taste of it. Like, why am I drinking this shit? And I don't even like it, right? But that was an eye opener for me. And that was when I decided, okay, you know what? I need a fresh start. Like, I need a way to start over. So I decided to go to uni in Atlanta. I left Bermuda and I pressed reset. So things were going really well for me in Atlanta. I got a full scholarship to study risk management and insurance, which is insurance is like the hub of Bermuda, commercial insurance. So I was like, okay, if I do this, I can definitely get a job when I go back home, you know, and I got a full scholarship for it. In that process, I had kept to myself for most of the time. Like my first year, I was so focused. Halfway through my second year, I meet this guy. And I think I was in a place where I was like, I don't really want to be a who. I kind of want a relationship. And I went into this situation very blind. Again, I think I was in a place kind of like with my husband. When I entered into that relationship, I was kind of running away from myself. And I wanted someone to save me. So entered into the relationship very quickly. And within 6 or 7 months, we were living together. When I met him, he was a DJ. And he mentioned to me that he did coke. I was naive. I didn't really understand addiction. So while I thought it was like recreational, it wasn't a problem. When I moved in with him, I realized how bad of a problem it was. Like, he snorted coke all night. He then drank himself to sleep. To wow. sleep all day, to get up and snort coke all night again. And this is even if he's not out. Like, that's what he did. As soon as he woke up in the afternoon, he started snorting coke. He started looking for the coke that he hid from himself the night before.
Wow.
And because I got my full scholarship, I always had money. And he knew that. So he started manipulating me and pretty much drained me of almost everything that I had. I had an emergency fund that I didn't tell him about just in case something happened and I needed to go back to Bermuda. But the thousands of dollars that I had received from my scholarship went up his nose. And I spent like one Christmas with no lights, no hot water, no food, because I didn't want him to know that I had money. I used to go back to Bermuda summertimes to work because that was part of like the requirements for my scholarship. And one year I had gone home and it was like, I want to go back. My birthday is in July, so I'm going to go back and I'm going to surprise him. I was paying for the apartment with my scholarship money. We were living together, paying for everything. And I surprised him. One day I walked into my apartment and that's when I met his wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it wasn't a long dragged out breakup. Like, I just packed my shit and I left because I was like, hell no. Like, but kind of yay, because I got out of that craziness. Right. So after that, I was like, you know, I need to take a break. I just need to focus on me. Like, I need to get my life together. I need to pull myself back together. And that was actually the lead up to my last semester in university. So I kept my hair down because I wanted to graduate, you know, and I knew immediately after graduation, I'll be moving back to Bermuda, which is what I did. So I moved back to Bermuda. I was really focused on myself. I got myself an apartment. I got a really amazing job as a catastrophe modeler in a commercial insurance company. Like, life was looking good. And then I meet this guy. But for the first time in my life, I was meeting someone when I wasn't in a dark place. And right before I met him, I read a list of like 45 things that I needed in a relationship and from a man. So I meet this guy, and as I'm getting to know him, like, he's ticking off all of these boxes. The only thing that he didn't meet was his height requirement, because I'm 5'10" and he is 5'8", right? So that's the only thing that he, you know, didn't check the box for. So that relationship was hot and heavy really fast. And within 6 weeks, we moved into an apartment together. The fresher of our relationship was like bliss. I had never, ever been treated like that before in my life. Like, it was almost like storybook movie kind of romance. Like, there was no bullshit. I got everything that I wanted out of that relationship. But one thing that was a red flag, he had told me that he had used crack cocaine at one point in time.
Wow.
And I had told him, listen, I just got out of a relationship with an addict. Like, I can't deal with that again. I probably shouldn't have told him that. Hindsight, right? Should have just taken it in and not let him know. But shortly after we had been together for a year, one of his family members died. And I think because I already had experience to addiction, I knew immediately that he was using. Like, the day after his family member was buried, it was a complete switch up. Like, it went from teddy bear loving to like grizzly bear warfare, right? And I remember questioning him about it. I was like, are you using? And he told me no.
Yeah, because you'd told him, you'd said that was your line, so he lied.
Yes. But I knew, like deep down, I knew. And as things progressed, there was like no doubt in my mind. Like he stopped coming home. He would come home and enough time to get ready for work. Always in a bad mood, you know. So one day I was like, listen, if you don't admit to me that you're using, I'm leaving. So he told me, I'm using, you know, I'm grieving. I need to get past this point. Although I had experience with an addict, I kind of still got sucked into the manipulation, even though I was probably more aware of what was going on than before. I felt bad for him because like dealing with death, like everybody deals with grief differently. So I kind of was kind of like giving them the benefit of the doubt. Like, you know, some people start drinking when family members dies, but once they work through the pain, they kind of stop. And that was my thought, like this will get better. But in the meantime, I started looking for some services for him, like rehabilitation, you know, try to get him back on track. And in that process, I met this lady who was a drug and alcohol counselor, but she was also a life coach. And she said to me, she goes, you know, usually I don't interact with family members, but I see something about you. I see how broken you are and I want to help you. And I was like, lady, I don't need your help. I'm trying to get help for my man, you know? But she was like, I get it, but take my card anyway. And I took her card. Things started getting progressively worse with my boyfriend. And as a result of his addiction, unbeknownst to me, he was stealing from his job. So he was a chef. And he was stealing like the most expensive cuts of meat and selling it for drugs. I saw him bringing home the meat, but because he was a chef, he also catered on the side.
Yeah, you wouldn't question it.
No, I wouldn't. And I didn't. And I remember one day being at a conference with my job, and I was at a conference right next to his job. And he called me and he was like, listen, I have an appointment after work. I'm going to go into rehab, but I need you to pick this package up for me. Okay, I'm right there. I'll do it. So I go to his job. I go pick up this bag. And as I'm walking out, I'm surrounded by security.
Oh no.
So his job had called onto the meat going missing and put a camera in the freezer and caught him stealing the meat. But they couldn't figure out how he was getting it out of the building. And they found out that day, right? So they took the package. He was actually downstairs in the kitchen. They called the police. He was arrested. I'm thinking, okay, that's the end of that. Let me go home. Life goes on. Weeks went by, actually. And I was at work one day and I got a call from reception telling me that the police were there to see me. What the hell are they coming here to see me for? So I was like, okay, well, I'll meet them in the lobby because I didn't want to have a conversation at my job. I'll meet them in the lobby. And I walked onto the lobby and I was arrested on my job. And to me, that was horrible. I was in law enforcement. Like, I'm pretty straight-laced. You know, like, I'm not about breaking law. Like, I like my freedom. And I remember having to call my mama. Like, my mama was, like, the one person that would come at like the worst times. And I called and I was like, listen, I need you to get me a lawyer so that I can get out of this situation. And I thought she'll just call a lawyer and, you know, but no, her ass showed up to the jail. And that for me was the worst situation I have been in. Yes, I've been stabbed. I've been caught with a married man. You know, I find out the man that I've been taking care of for 3 years is married. Like, I've been through a lot of shit. But sitting behind the glass, talking to my mama through a phone, that was the worst thing to me. And I remember her saying to me, why do you love everyone else more than you love yourself?
Wow.
That was like a body blow by Mike Tyson. Like, you could not have hit me harder than that in that moment. But that was what I needed to hear in order for me to seek change in my life. I went back to my cell and I remember sitting there and just like reflecting on everything that happened and just thinking, my decisions got me here. You know, like, yeah, I didn't steal anything, but all of my decisions got me to right where I am today. And if I don't start making better decisions, like, they're going to throw away the key with me. You know what I mean? Luckily, I was never charged with anything. I think they arrested me to get information to charge the boyfriend, but he never got charged either, weirdly enough. But that was enough for me. Like I said, Bermuda, very small community. People knew that I had gotten arrested on my job, and that will follow you. Like, I remember hearing a story when I was like 9 years old about a girl that stuffed a hot dog up her pussy, right? And people still tell that story today. So, like, I knew that I couldn't get away from that. You know what I mean? So I called that life coach after I got out of jail. And I was like, listen, I just need I need to do something different so that my life could change. And I started working with her. And when I say that was like the biggest eye opener for me, like, prior to this time, everything about my life was like, I'm a victim. Life is happening to me. Like, I don't have control over anything. But working with her made me realize how much control I actually did have over my life. And that was liberating for me. So one of the things that I took control of was the opportunity to restart my life. And I moved to England. I moved to England to support my boyfriend who had gone into rehab. And he's now my husband. We have now two beautiful children and he has been clean for 9 years. So moving to England for me was the opportunity to like truly press reset, start over, create a new narrative for myself, right? And I started working at Lloyd's of London. For those who don't know, it's the oldest insurance institution in the world. And for me, that was like the pinnacle of my career. People who worked in Bermuda longed to work in Lloyd's. So for me, like, after everything that I've been through, you know, even in my job, people couldn't take me, you know, that self-contained hurricane shit. Like, people don't know how to take me. I've got a big personality. I'm not a pushover, even though I've been through a lot of abuse. I think that made me harder. Like, I don't put up with anybody's shit. And coming to England with that attitude, boy, I don't fit in here. Let's put it that way. I'm not passive. Yeah. I'm not polite. I'm in your face. I'm assertive and I don't give a shit. I don't care what you think of me. So as you can imagine, my first two jobs, I had a lot of problems because I'm a hot box. You can't even look at me the wrong way without getting some lip service. But when I got the job at Lloyd's of London, I realized, okay, look, turn it down. This is your opportunity to really, really shine. I was hired to be a manager. I built a new team for this company and I ran that for 5 years. But the problem was, I'm a Black foreign woman in a predominantly white English environment, male environment, and I had a leadership role. The man that I worked with didn't appreciate that I was a person that you could not, you can't walk all over me. You can't make me do what it is that you want to do. You hired me to do something and I'm running my department the way I want to run it. But in doing so, I was very, very successful. But people were intimidated by me because I was not that person that would, ha ha, yes, hi, let's talk about the weather. No, get down to business. And if you're not talking to me about business, take that shit elsewhere. People who know me have always said that I probably should be a lawyer because I can argue with you over the color of water and wind, right? So they used to label me intimidating. They used to label me scary. I used to go into meetings with my manager and my manager give a disclaimer about me before I even talk. Like, she used to work in law enforcement. She's very rough around the edges. And after a while, I got tired of that shit. Like, I'm heard all my life that I'm too much. And now that I'm actually comfortable with myself, I'm not looking for external validation. I'm still not accepted. And it got tiring for me. So very recently, I walked away from my 9-to-5, a 14-year career, to pursue coaching, because coaching is what changed my life. Coaching is what allowed me to fully embrace the power that I have. And if it wasn't for that woman seeing me that day, I don't know where I would be. So I'm really passionate about helping other people change their narratives. I tell people, you know, the experiences that I had made me a victim. My ability to survive them made me a survivor. But my healing and my work, the work that I did on myself, that's what made me a thriver. And I appreciate, which probably sounds crazy, but I am grateful for every single thing that I've been through, every scar that I had, every emotional wound that I had, because it makes me a great coach. It allows me to help other women who believe that the story cannot be changed, change the story, change the narrative, change their life. And yeah, that's my story.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations on all of your thriving. So first of all, on getting that job that everyone back home would love to have, and then on deciding to pack it in and following your passions. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And your story is absolutely riveting. I can't believe all of that happened to one person. And yeah, you are so strong. You come across as well, like, really positive and happy, and like, it's amazing how you've handled all of that. And as you said, thriving is really the word, the proper word.
Thank you. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just so grateful, because I know, like, the me of 10 years ago, I always tell people, like, even when I was working, if you met me 10 years ago, you would think this person is a pussycat, okay? Like, trust me. You wouldn't be able to deal with it. But I am just, you know, sometimes you look back and sometimes when I tell my story, like, I remember a little bit more. My time with my husband is almost like it didn't happen to me. No, where I am today. But I know that if I hadn't healed, I'd probably be reliving that on a regular basis, you know? So I'm really full of gratitude for the growth that I've experienced so that I can help other people.
That is amazing. Can you remind everyone where to find you, where to connect with you?
Yes. Connect with me on Instagram, Black Rose Coaching. Black is spelled B-L-A-Q-U-E. I love a conversation. So just hit me up, say hello, and we can chat.
I'll put all your links down in the description on YouTube and in the show notes on the audio platforms. Thank you so much for joining and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to the podcast if you listen to it on the audio platforms. If you do listen to it on the audio platforms, please give us a review. It really, really helps out with the old rankings and the algorithm. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel if you like to watch the video version, and all the links will be down in the description. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again for joining and sharing your story.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in the next one. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by The Shift. For more like this, check out theshift.ie.